Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Untouchable. Seriously, we dare you to try and touch him. Bob McCowan at Primetime Sports. Now. On the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It is the last and final hour for the week. It is Friday, October 17th, 2014, and this is Primetime Sports, Canada's most listened to sports talk show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360 across the country. Yours truly, Bob McCowan, along with John Shannon, Elliot Friedman, Michael Grange around the table. Well, we have established the competitors for the 2014 World Series. The Kansas City Royals are on an extraordinary run that has not seen them defeated as yet in this postseason. And the San Francisco Giants, certainly a team with a history that suggests they were more than capable of being in the World Series, although some would have said that they had some mountains to climb over, which they have done, and they've avoided the Los Angeles Dodgers. Not that that necessarily was the be-all and end-all.
Two wildcard teams, though, right?
Yes. Second time ever.
Yeah. And I guess, in a nutshell, it's very difficult, for me at least, though I hold a rooting interest for the Kansas Cities. I love an underdog story, and they are the ultimate underdog story, I think. I just have a hard time. I mean, I didn't see them doing any of what they've done. I didn't think they beat Oakland in the play-in game. Can you make a case? I guess you can make a case, but I can't make a case, really, for them beating the Giants.
You thought they wouldn't beat Baltimore either, but I...
I don't think they beat Oakland.
You know...
Before the game or during it.
I am with you. I want to see the Royals win. I am tired of the Giants. I am tired of the Cardinals. I'm glad they couldn't play each other. I think the Giants are just too good.
They won 88 games.
They have
a tougher division, though.
I don't know. The Giants just have whatever it
they have
is.
Intangibles?
The Giants have it.
Okay.
And I love the Royals, and I picked them over the Orioles, and I love to see them win. I just see it coming to an end.
Did you pick them over the Angels?
No.
Okay.
But I picked them over the Orioles, so I go with the most recent prediction.
I didn't pick them over anybody.
I
got to be
honest. Giants, and Bochy has such a good handle on his team. Like, he really does. Like, Yost goes in there. He is like the guy who discovers electricity by accident. Like, Bochy knows exactly what is going on. And I don't know. I'd love to see the Royals win, but I just don't see it.
I don't think managers have anything to do with it, but that's another story
Wrong.
Altogether.
Wrong.
I don't think so.
Is there any advantage the fact that they're going to play American League rules for four games if it goes seven?
Sure, potentially. But can you cite a World Series that's been decided because of that? I always think at the beginning of a World Series where the advantage lies, and I think it almost invariably lies with the American League team. But I don't know.
I think it helps the National League team.
You're
used to your pitchers hitting, and you can have an extra hitter in the American parks. Like, how bad is that?
Yeah, but usually the pitchers don't mean anything hitting, whether they're American League hitters or National League hitters. Neither one of them can hit.
But at least they're used to doing it.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means, though. At the end of a World Series.
Four strikes or four pitches or three.
Extra bunt.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it can come into play a little bit. I acknowledge that. But I think when you look at the end of a World Series and take a look at the batting averages of the pitchers, the batting averages of the National League pitchers, the point of difference? Like, our guys hit 150 and your guys hit 050, therefore we won the World Series? I don't remember a single World Series where I felt that way.
I remember David Cohn. Didn't he not have a big hit for the Blue Jays in the 92 World Series? And if I remember correctly, he had a pretty big hit. And
sure, it can happen.
But that's what I'm saying. I would take any edge I could. That's all I'm saying.
Well, but then when the National League team goes to the American League Park, they got to find a DH.
I'd rather do that than have to worry about anything else.
Whereas American League teams, as a general rule, have a DH who knows how to hit. It's not their next best guy.
Right.
It's a guy who really can hit. Grange, you're sitting here quietly for a change.
I think if anything has been proven in this postseason is the postseason is a crapshoot, right? Mm-hmm. And baseball is 162 games where probabilities eventually get proven, and then all of a sudden you're in the postseason and literally anything can happen. The one thing that has proven true with Kansas City regular season to postseason is their back end of their bullpen statistically is the best that there ever has been. There's never been a team with three pitchers with ERAs that have pitched at least 60 innings and ERAs under 1.5 or 2. Mm-hmm. No one's ever had that before. They're pitching exactly to form mm-hmm. in the 8 games so far. They've allowed 3 runs in 25 innings or whatever it is. So that is one thing you can absolutely hang your hat on going into 7 games. The rest of it, who knows?
Yeah. Well, who's starting pitching do you like, though? I mean, when you look at the starting pitch,
I love the Giants.
So do I.
Baumgartner. What a Vogel song. You know you're getting 5 innings. Pitch into the 6th, it's a gong show, but he'll give you 5.
Yeah, but I mean...
You know, I like them
Kansas
a lot.
City has shown that they can get 6 innings out of their guys. They're going to be rested. Both teams will be rested. I'll go with Kansas City. Why not?
You know, the reason is that, first of all, the Giants...
Defense travels.
But the Giants do a lot of things Kansas City does. Mm-hmm. Like, their bullpen is not as good as Kansas City's, but it's been really good in the playoffs. Really good. Their defense is also really good. And the other thing, too, is in the American League, teams don't deal with a team like Kansas City a lot. Like the running team, the team that doesn't hit a homers, the team that sacrificed bunts, the team that steals bases, that's foreign to a lot of American League teams. That's not foreign to San Francisco. The National League is much more like that.
And I think you're missing the most important thing in this whole equation.
What's that?
Experience. Been there, done that, got that T-shirt.
Was it 3 and 5 years for the Giants?
Yeah. Every even year.
Okay.
You know, sometimes, Bob, I think experience is overrated. But I think experience in playing against the kind of game that Kansas City has befuddled the American League with, the Giants won't be fooled by that. They see it a lot more.
Does that explain some of the hirings on Rogers Hockey? That experience is overrated?
That's right. We're befuddled. Yes.
I think experience is invaluable.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much of a role it plays. You can never quantify it. Nobody can.
Well,
more experienced than Kansas City this year in the American League. And
I don't know. I'm not going to dismiss it. It's World Series. I think your collar there's an extra button that you do up when you get to the World Series, and it can make some guys choke.
I think the 5 days off hurts the Royals more than it does the Giants. I do agree with that.
Why?
Because of that, I mean, the Giants will be prepared for. They've seen this all. That there's going to be a big build-up.
If you're used to playing every day, you're used to playing every day.
But also, momentum was going the Royals' way.
I would have said that had the Giants won in 6 or had they won in 7. But
they won in five, and they have four days off, too.
My point is that that's the one part where experience I do think is a factor, because the Royals are going to have to sit around for 5 days and talk about something that they've never done before. Their momentum gets stalled. The Giants will get stalled, too, but they're a team that's been here. Mm-hmm. Like, I think they'll be able to handle the buildup probably better than some of those guys in Kansas City will.
Got to learn how to lose before you learn how to win sometimes. And I don't underestimate experience in a big game or a big series. John?
I like the Giants. I like the Giants for a couple of guys. I think Hunter Pence just seems, and I talk about experience, Hunter Pence seems to be able to deliver, you know, key hits, great defensive plays at key times. He may not be the most likable guy if you're not a Giants fan, but Pence is one of those guys that seems to be able to deliver at key times. Mm-hmm. And I think if there's an opportunity, particularly a long series, maybe seven games, to put Baumgartner on the mound three times, I'm going with the Giants. And I think that there's a chance that that could happen if they get that far. Remember, the Giants win one game in Kansas City, the first two, and then they go play three at home. Three at AT&T Park. And I think it would not shock me that the Giants win the series in five games.
I want to see the other reason I want the Giants to win is because Baumgartner has proven he's a beer-chugging machine. He did six last night. I want to see how many he does if the Giants win the World Series.
I don't know how you can get tired of the Giants winning. I really, I don't. I mean, I just think
it's someone new.
Great stadium. I mean,
it might be the best in baseball.
Yes, I mean, it's a series of two great ballparks, mm-hmm. which that's kind of cool. I mean, when you modern, you know, they remodeled the Kauffman Stadium. It's a cool place, and then hitting into McCovey Cove. I mean, I don't think you can beat it. So to me, that's one of the great attractive parts of being the visuals of the World Series. But they're a fun team to watch. Mm-hmm. They really are. You may not. I mean, you're probably a Dodger fan.
No. I get tired of watching the same teams all the time. Like, you know, the one difference I actually have to tell you is the Yankees, because the Yankees bring such passion to you that you really love them or really hate them. They're a draw. Like, I could watch them in all those World Series in a row.
I look at it exactly the opposite.
I have nothing against the Giants, and I agree with you. AT&T Ballpark is a beautiful place, but I'm kind of bored of seeing them, and I can't stand the Cardinals. I don't even want to watch them anymore.
I think I hate parody. I love dynasties.
Yeah.
And the Giants dynasty is sort of the parallel to me of the New England Patriots. It's not like five straight, but it's there. It's every year, every year, every year, right there, right there, right there. It's as close as we may have to dynasties in the modern era. But I love that. It gives you a rooting interest. It gives you somebody to hate. I love the Royals. I love the Royal story. Mm-hmm. I'm betting against them. Here's another interesting fact. It is not difficult to project that this World Series will be made up of nail-biting close games. The history of both teams in the postseason has been a lot of close games.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not low scoring, although you'd think so, but close. Again, late in ball games, don't you think experience matters? When everything's on the line, eighth or ninth inning, one-run game either way, the Giants have already demonstrated a real ability to generate just enough.
You know, I think Mike hit on the key point. Like, if those Kansas City relievers were going to falter, they would have faltered already. Like, they, as John mentioned, they were down, 7-3 in a one-game playoff? They won.
Well, and part of the reason they got into such a big hole is that Ned Yost wouldn't alter his
6, 7, 8, 9 rotation. You know. Like, I look at Kansas City, and you know, Bob, maybe you guys are right. Maybe they do get blown out 5 games, 4 games, whatever. But at what point do you look at a team and say, you know what, experience is not necessarily the factor here? You're in the World Series.
Well, what do you say?
You've won 8 games in a row. You're unbeaten since 1985. Like, you know, you at some point you have to say that experience, these guys are precocious enough that the experience doesn't matter.
What do they say during the regular season in baseball, right? There's no such thing as momentum. Momentum begins and ends with the next day starting pitcher. So, you know, we can sit and hash it out as well as we want, but is James Shields going to step up and, you know, throw it to a hitter?
Give you something.
Then I would suggest Kansas City is going to have momentum. I mean, I like Baumgartner in the sense that this break looks like it gives them a chance to pitch the first game on his regular rest.
Exactly.
And that sets up quite nicely. I think that's a factor that is significant, where no matter who Kansas City throws, they're going to be a little bit off their regular rest.
I hate doing this, but it's like we must. Who and in how many games, Elliot?
Giants in 6.
Kansas City in 6.
Giants in 5.
Giants in 5. I mean, I'm inclined to say 6, but I think I like John's scenario of a split in Kansas City and then all Giants from there on. 25 years ago today, the earth moved in San Francisco.
That's right. Yep.
The San Francisco World Series earthquake took place. It is, when I found out it was 25 years ago, I was stunned. It seems like it was just yesterday. We spent a lot of time talking about it. Trying to remember exactly where I was and what I was doing, but I was here. What are your recollections of that, Shannon?
Well, I was telling the boys before the show started, living in Calgary, I was one of those techno geeks that had my neighbors loved me because I had a 10-foot satellite dish in my backyard. It really looked attractive in the suburbs. And I was watching the clean feed, no commercials, right out of the truck. And what I watched was long before it got to commercial integration in New York City, watching Michaels and McCarver, and then watching the back talk as their generator came back up and they were able to tell stories. And Michaels, because he was a San Francisco resident for a long time, understood the city and ended up with Peter Jennings describing the whole city and what was important and where the bridge was down and where the districts around all the piers were in trouble. And if you're a TV geek like I am, it was a fascination to just be behind the curtain a little bit to watch as television really covered a disaster. And what and I say this...
Well, sports television.
Well, and I say this as a guy who we live and die with live. You know, not many people in our business live and die with live anymore. And the sports guys, how they handled a live television situation because they could read and react situations. It wasn't a script. And that, to me, was just, from a television perspective, magical. And then how the city reacted and how the city became caring for each other.
First-year university, Western Ontario in London, watching the game on TV. And the one thing I do remember is this guy who wanted to go into broadcasting, watching Al Michaels that night and realizing that guy was a superstar.
Yeah.
Like, you thought about Al Michaels as a guy who called games and did a really good job. That's the night you realize, as John said, that this guy was, he wasn't just a play-by-play guy. He was an elite level talent, a reporter, a broadcaster. Like, remember he was on the phone because his mic got knocked out.
Mm-hmm. And the only feed going out of the ballpark belonged to ESPN.
Yeah.
And eventually ABC, who at that time I don't think owned ESPN.
I don't think they did, no.
Wound up using ESPN. ESPN wasn't even covering the game. They were just doing reports or whatever.
Pre and post.
But they had their own truck and their own facility there because the U.S. network wouldn't share, and they were the only ones who stayed on the air.
Yeah.
And eventually, it was ABC hooked up with the ESPN feed to get back on the air. I'm not as surprised as you think, because I would say to you that the skill set of doing play by play is not dissimilar from the skill set of covering a live event like that.
Well, I think it's not only that, but I think it's as John mentioned, like, the best thing that ever happened to me as a broadcaster was when I started at The Score, they didn't use teleprompters. And obviously when you do that...
You think the viewer liked that?
Well, the viewer had to suffer through a lot of my early pains. But I think if you are a person who can do it that way, and obviously Al Michaels could, I was just, on the top five, like, I've gone back and watched the tapes of Jim McKay in 1972 when the Israeli athletes were attacked in Munich, and watched how he handled that live. And like, to me, Jim McKay in 1972, Al Michaels that year in 89 are maybe the two most impressive live performances I've ever seen.
I wouldn't dispute that.
Yeah.
You have any recollections?
You know what? I don't really, because I was in Sackville, New Brunswick. No internet. Papers came 3 or 4 days after.
They have TV out there?
They did have TV, but I don't have a vivid memory of watching it because I could have been, who knows what I might have been done. The best experience I've had related to that event has been our friend Dave Perkins, who was at that game covering it, and he's got, I mean, he should be the guy here. He's got a treasure trove of stories being on the ground. And
sure. Well, and Candlestick being Candlestick, I as a family and then as an adult, I spent many days watching baseball at Candlestick Park, even before it was enclosed, you knew that it was a, it was not never in the greatest of shape, and it was just,
it was a miracle it didn't come down.
This was this giant piece of concrete with cantilevered stadium. I mean, it was an amazing architectural design. That you're right, Bob. I mean, why didn't something happen that night? Why didn't it happen earlier? And why didn't it happen in the years since? And that to me was all part. I felt a little kinship to San Francisco in that situation, knowing where everything was, how minuscule the press box is there. Really, you feel trapped in the press box, and then the event itself. And you know what? I was actually enjoying the baseball. I was.
You know, John, it's funny because that was one of the worst World Series of our lifetimes.
Yeah.
It was lopsided.
Yep.
The baseball was terrible, especially after they resumed the series. Like, you could tell the players' hearts
weren't in,
they
weren't in it.
Were not in it. Yeah.
25 years ago today. Meanwhile, the Toronto Raptors, 4-1 in the preseason. Not exactly a juggernaut, but everything kind of going according to plan. There's something different about this team, a confidence level that I think the fans probably share with the players. I get no sense that anybody thinks that last year was a fluke, and only that the team can at least duplicate what they did last year and may be able to build on it. What do you think, Grange, of the prospects of this year's Raptors team?
I think there's tremendous potential for exactly that. If I were to be a little bit cold waterish, the teams in the East that they're going to have to beat are bigger than them. And the Brooklyn Nets, for example, I think there's going to be some addition by subtraction there with Paul Pierce out of that rotation. I think it really smooths things out. And Lionel Hollins there is going to be, you know, a walk it up, slow it down guy. And presuming Lopez is just, he missed all of last season with foot problems and is just now out, I think, 6 weeks or something with some foot problems. Presumably, if he's healthy, I think the Nets are going to be a problem. I think the Chicago Bulls with the addition of with
Gasol
is going to be a problem. Obviously, Derrick Rose. And, you know, and I think Miami might be a little bit better than people are giving them credit for. And obviously, Cleveland. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think on one hand, there's all the reasons you cited to say, hey, it can only get better from here. I think the road is going to be a little tougher this year than it was last year. And, you know, I don't think it makes it a lock for them to be a top four team or an Atlantic Division title winner.
Mr. Negative. Michael Graves.
No,
Grange.
Not Mr. Negative. No, I think
I'm just
kidding.
If you're
going to look at that lineup.
In their division, though, the division's not strong.
But Brooklyn, I think.
Brooklyn's in it.
Well, that's one.
Yeah, but yeah, the division's not strong. But to be a top four team, you either got to have a top four record or win your division.
Sure.
How good do you think Indiana is?
I think they're going to be not a 60-win team, which is what they were last year.
Yeah.
But they, you know, I don't
a
think
pain in the butt. Like
pain in the butt. Yeah, I think, you know, and I think Paul George might be back sooner than some people think.
Like what, Christmas?
Maybe. But you know, I'm not counting Indiana among these teams.
Right.
I think if you look at the East, I can think of five teams that could give the Raptors a real problem. And that's not talking about Washington, who was they're having the exact same discussion we're having here, that they're in Washington, that last year was a building block, and they're going to jump off from that.
The losses by the franchise, John Salmons and Steve Novak, you could argue, were negligible contributors overall.
Yes.
They played some minutes, but hard to see how losing either of them would impact negatively if nobody came back in return. What they got in return, essentially, was Lou Williams and James Johnson. And both of them are have warts, but there's certainly more upside there. Do you see these two guys as contributors?
Oh, 100%. I think they give Dwayne Casey tools, very obvious tools to use to fix very obvious problems. James Johnson, in particular, I think if he is as advertised and performs, is willing to accept the role they have in mind for him. I think he gives them something they haven't had, and that's something they can throw at stretch fours, big twos, Joe Johnson in particular. Lou Williams, I think, has already shown in the preseason. He is a really exciting scorer, something the Raptors haven't really had. The only challenge...
Does he get playing time?
That's going to be the challenge. There's going to be an odd person out, right? Because you've got Lowry, Ross, DeRozan, and Vasquez, and Lou Williams. That's five. I don't see how you get minutes for all those five. I think someone's going to get squeezed.
Who do you think it is?
You know, on paper, it'd probably be Terrence Ross. And if it's not him, that's a good thing because he's really picked up his game.
Yeah, I see Terrence Ross as the obvious odd man out.
Yeah.
Well, and yet, for a third guy in his third year, you don't really.
He had a 50-point game, didn't he, last
year? He did
have
a 50-point game.
That's kind of quick to write a guy.
But he also went south in the postseason. He also went south against Brooklyn in the postseason.
First playoffs.
Don't misinterpret what I'm saying.
I get all that.
I'm not saying give up on the guy. Yeah. I'm just saying that that's a lot of minutes, a lot of guys to find for roughly the same amount of minutes. Mm-hmm. And I think Vasquez has shown that he's first because he can play both guard positions. He plays well alongside Lowry coming off the bench.
Right.
I think makes sense there. Lou Williams is an end of game type guy who's already shown in preseason he can get his game off. And Terrence Ross, he's going to have to find a way to make the coach play him.
He's got to find a way to put the ball on the floor and get to the basket. Because you can't just stand in the corner
and shoot threes. They don't want. Well, that's the thing. Is that's sort of the role they.
Well, I get that
they have for him.
But when I see him put the ball on the floor, I get nervous, John.
Well, one of the guys you haven't mentioned is Valanciunas, and you have to.
Well, only in the context of.
No, I understand. No, but
he's part of the original five.
Well, you know, how many minutes?
Or that the East has as bigger. Than people think, and bigger than they were last year.
And so, how much pressure will be on him? Particularly, I would expect that they want him to play more minutes to take a little bit of pressure off what Amir Johnson does too. I mean, Johnson can't get banged up as much as he did almost every year that he's been here. And I think the growth of Valanciunas to me is where the growth of this team is. That would be my first impression, don't you think?
Yeah, no, I mean, he's still a very young player, and I think he's going to have his work cut out for him. I mean. Like I said, those teams that they're going to have to try and climb over are not insignificant in the post.
Well, and the other thing is this now a team that people see them coming?
Oh, 100%.
You know, and what difference does that make in Miami, in Brooklyn? Well, Cleveland's another story. But, did they take this team too lightly, and now they know that they're a force?
Can't sneak up on everybody like you did at the end of last year.
Right.
No question about it.
All of that said, I mean, there's a lot of room to draw optimism. There's no – and continuity and chemistry. And the two teams that I always refer to with these guys are Memphis Grizzlies and Indiana Pacers. And each of those teams – sort of similar, you know, Paul George has sort of emerged as a superstar, but not really those, you know, there's no LeBron James in those lineups. And I think at one point they each had, I think Memphis had four of their five starters had played together for the same coach for 400 games.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it showed. Right.
Until Memphis started firing all their coaches for no good
reason. And Indiana had a similar run of a consistency with their lineup.
You know what I liked about this organization, and it came to light for me on this show a few days ago, when you had the conversation with Masai.
From some unknown place in Europe?
From Europe. And here's a guy that...
He hates the preseason.
Well, but the
doesn't
point...
Doesn't want to watch it.
Good, you know what? He's like every other fan.
Doesn't want to watch it.
No, but is outdoing his job as Casey does his, and the communication and the confidence in that situation. Says, you know what, I'm going to go procure players and Dwayne's going to do his job now. To me, that's really an indication of an organization secure in itself.
You know what?
And that's really important.
They're low maintenance.
Yeah.
And Toronto has really struggled to find low maintenance organizations.
Well, I don't know what you mean by that, Arya. Yeah.
like Ujiri is a low maintenance guy. Dwayne Casey really seems like a low maintenance guy. Like, Mike, you're around them a lot more than I am. And, you know, in this city, I think that's a huge breath of fresh air.
Like, these guys,
like, all the Raptor fans, when Lywicki was announced he was going to leave, like, the Raptor fans are worried. I understand why the Raptor fans are worried. Like, this team, to me, it seems to me as they're in great hands.
No, I think I think the worry was that wherever Leiwicki went, or if when Leiwicki leaves, is that Masai is going to either follow or disappear.
I
think I think
he's got 4 years left on his deal. Yeah. So,
but I think in the interim, there's a lot more belief now that that this guy's in full control, and maybe even in more control now that we know that Leiwicki's not going to be here after 2 weeks, 2 months, or at least until June 30.
A lot of people like to look at last year's Raptor team as a surprise, a shock even to some. I would say if you really looked at the year before, they got off to that terrible 4-19 start. And in the subsequent games, I think actually played one game over 500. Now, granted, they were already out of it. It's easier to play better. But nonetheless, they showed some signs to me that suggested this might be a pretty decent nucleus. So last year's success was more than I expected, but not a complete shock. But the bar every year invariably moves. Where's the bar in 2014, 2015?
I think people want to see a win a playoff round.
Yes.
You got to win the division. You got to win 50 games. You got to win a playoff round.
You think you got to do all that?
Two of those three. I think one begets the other, to be honest. But
50 games wins the Atlantic?
You have a good shot.
Okay.
I wouldn't want to try and win it with much less.
Wouldn't you say if you won 50 games but didn't win the division, you'd be fine?
You'd be a good year,
sure. I have to tell you, I wouldn't. Just as a guy who watches, I don't have as much invested as a lot of fans, and I really wouldn't care. Like, as long as you got in and you won a playoff round, I wouldn't care if you won a division or won 50 games or what. I mean, you want to see the team playing well. You want to see the process going in the right direction. But say you win 52 games, you win the Atlantic, and you lose in the first round. Is anybody going to say, well, 2 out of 3 ain't bad? No. As Bob, as you said, the bar is higher. They want to see one.
The bar is invariably higher.
The bar is higher.
This team has been here before, right? Two other times in its history. They've had that. Looks like they're at this stage. There's momentum going forward, and it's frittered itself out really quickly. And I think if you're a Raptors fan, if I'm a guy who's been around this team forever, you're waiting for some sustainability. And I think that's what you've got to demonstrate this year.
We got to take the break, but first I want to say thank you to our friends at Krabby Joe's for the Friday Feast. The menu today includes delicious flatbreads like Joe's Wraparound Alfredo and Cross-Checked Chipotle Flatbread. We got some signature wings and their delicious Bora Bora salad. Treat the family tonight and let Krabby Joe's take care of dinner. For menu options and locations, go to KrabbyJoe's.com. Primetime Sports continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.
Because seriously, when's the last time you were sober enough to wake up at 5:30 a.m. to listen live? Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
I had to wait for the vocals to come in. Well, I got to sit here and just listen, huh?
I know. You're going to start.
Time for the bullets, little things that sometimes come, big things rarely do, especially with this group. Oh, by the way, here's the group. it is Friedman, Grange, and Shannon around the table. Item! ESPN.com has ranked nearly every NBA player. And number 40 on the list is Kobe Bryant. In response, when asked about the ESPN ranking, Kobe said, "They're a bunch of idiots," unquote. Is Kobe being slighted at number 40 on the all-time list? Elliot Friedman.
Sadly, no.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably a fair ranking. I just hope it doesn't turn out to be one of those things where we see the obvious decline of a star that hangs on too long.
I think by the end of this year, he'll be a lot higher than 40th. Put it that way.
I mean, isn't the issue with Kobe right now, with his age, not necessarily his ability, but his ability to heal?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, I think he had 27 against Utah in an exhibition game. So I think his fire is there. If you accept the fact that coming off, you know, the knee injury was a one-off and the Achilles is healed, he appears to have been to be healed. Everything out of LA is that he's moving and playing great.
How long do you think this, we've agreed on how many minutes he's going to play thing is going to last?
He's going to play as many as he wants, as long as he needs to. And he's going to put up some big numbers.
Health is obviously the reason. Yeah, he didn't play last year, and he went from 25th to 40th.
As long as
he don't
break. That's
how ESPN is explaining it.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're going to go by what he did last year, he should have been 450th, right? He played six games. He was terrible in all six.
Yeah. I mean, it also should be pointed out, too, that you're right. He did score 27 points against the Utah Jazz, and the Utah Jazz beat the Lakers by about a million.
That's not the point. That's not the issue.
It is the issue, because in any NBA game, somebody got to score.
Okay, so if we're talking
guys that score when the team loses by 30, that's irrelevant.
Kobe Bryant, his legend, arguably, was built in those years between the two three-peats, and he was putting up 50 points a night, and he was the only show in town, and he was carrying a team on his back, and that's when he became Kobe, in a way.
Well, he didn't carry the team on his back because he didn't win any championships.
He did, and the popular legend of Kobe Bryant is that he did. Right, he was single-handedly.
Well, he won all the championships in spite of Shaquille O'Neal. Is that what you're saying?
No,
is that the legend?
The legend of Kobe Bryant would be he didn't necessarily get the credit he deserved for the three he won with Shaq. In between,
but who was the creator of this legend?
Kobe,
correct.
Mm-hmm.
They destroyed a championship team because they could not stand each other.
Yeah, and that's not all Kobe's fault.
It's not all Kobe's fault.
Remember the stories of Kobe going cross town to the Clippers because he was just sick and tired of not getting the credit that he deserved at the Lakers and the relationship he had with somebody other than the Jerry Buss.
Right? He's a crazy dude. I mean, but all I'm saying is if at game 40 the Lakers are 20-20, which might be charitable, and he's doing 25-6-6, and we'll ignore whatever his shooting percentage might be at the time.
25 might be a nice number for that.
You know,
too.
The story will be the incredible renaissance of Kobe Bryant, mind over matter, the strongest. You know, it'll be like Derek Jeter with Edge.
Whoa.
No.
Derek Jeter was a nice guy all the time.
Come on.
Derek Jeter didn't have court cases.
No, that's what I'm saying. I mean, in terms of a Hall of Fame player in his twilight, yeah. Raging against the light. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, fair enough.
And in Kobe's case,
I want to know why you don't like Derek Jeter.
I just remember, first of all, I have great admiration for him as a player.
Just say what you really feel. But why do you got to back into it?
No, because...
Don't be controversial.
I really had a
what
problem.
What are you, an A-Rod guy?
No, God, no. God, no. I just remember I remember that Ken Huckabee thing here and the way he basically destroyed that guy for a play that Ken Huckabee really didn't do anything wrong. And I didn't like it. I thought it was ungracious. It was unfair.
Careful. Sportsmanship.
Yeah. I was not impressed how he just buried the guy who was trying to make a hustle play and get him out at third base.
Really?
Yeah.
Bothered you all this time.
Well, I just say, like,
I want guys that want to win it at all.
Oh, come on.
I want guys that want to win it all.
Really, and also, I think that for a long time, I really thought, like, the heart and soul of the Yankees were guys like Paul O'Neill. And George Posada and... Jorge Posada.
Or George. Come on.
And while they were all there, I thought those guys didn't get enough credit.
Bernie
Williams.
I'm changing the
subject. They didn't get
subject.
Enough credit.
This is going
and
nowhere.
And Jeter
this
got too much.
This is a personal agenda. I think there's evidence that you were dropped on your head when you were
there's probably
small child.
A lot of evidence
from Kobe
of that.
Kobe Bryant to Bernie Williams. Boom.
The Milwaukee Bucks are under new ownership after Herb Cole sold the team for $550 million, which almost sounds cheap with the prices that
sold
are going
it too
around.
Soon.
The senator was a little soon. Upset that he waited, didn't yeah. wait long enough.
Then
that's
you remember
all.
They're in Milwaukee.
Yeah, so. but now the details of the sale and the contingencies are starting to be revealed, and they are most interesting. If I understand how things are likely to work here, The National Basketball Association has the option to buy the team back from the new owners if construction of a new arena is not ready by 2017 for the price of $575 million. So these new owners could own the team for a couple of years, put $25 million in their jeans, assuming they don't lose anything or make anything.
They're not going to lose anything with the new TV deal coming
in. It doesn't kick in until after that.
But whatever, I'm just saying it's a quick flip for $25 million. The NBA could then turn around and sell that team to a group in Seattle for what has been estimated to be $1.6 billion. That would be a nice $1 billion profit for to be split each way by or in appropriate measure by each of the 29 other owners. What do we make of all this?
There's a behind-the-scenes, under-the-table deal? I'm shocked, I tell you.
Or just a little message to go out to the city of Milwaukee, build yourself a new arena before 2017.
The Mecca is no longer the Mecca. Oh, the Mecca's gone, right? Bradley Center. That's right. I'm really outdated. Yeah. I'm thinking of Don Nelson with the fish ties.
Wayne Embry is not the manager of the Bucks anymore.
No, Don Nelson was the guy when I was a kid.
Well, it raises this question, too, with, some years ago, and not that long ago, I guess, a decade? We all, any time a major professional sports franchise rattled the threat of leaving if we don't get a new building, they usually got it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was paid for by somebody else. Those days aren't over, but professional sports leagues are still playing that card.
Mm-hmm.
That card isn't as valuable as it used to be.
Those markets, I think, are still vulnerable, right? And, you look at Minneapolis, St. Paul, they've got two state-funded hockey arenas. They've built four state. They've got four pro sports facilities built there in the last 10 years old. Target Center's 20 years old.
Right.
So I think that's the difference, is you're not going to bully a major market into doing that, but a market like Milwaukee, Buffalo, we've seen it, right? Like they know that these things are a lot more valuable to those markets because in their absence,
sure they are.
Nothing's going to rush in.
There's lots of people to say, you build a new basketball stadium, basketball arena downtown, you're going to be in a situation, you're going to improve the tax base, and the city's going to get the revenue back. There's all that gobbledygook out there that sometimes makes sense. And how much revenue do the Bucks bring to downtown Milwaukee for their 41 home days?
I think it becomes an identity thing.
Yeah.
I really do. I think it's like, for every study, there's a study. You can find, there's a great website now. It's called Field of Schemes. And you can go through there and they will debunk they will take every article about a stadium to be built and they will crush it. And it's interesting read. But I think if you're a city of Milwaukee, if you lose the Bucks, you're down to the Brewers. And I think only those people can decide, is that important? And that it's the emotion that gets to you, not the numbers.
Item, for a long time, many people, perhaps everybody on this panel, has acknowledged that the seasons in sport are too long. The NBA has now said, we're going to try 11-minute quarters. Is that the answer?
No.
Quick response.
Because
he didn't even let you finish.
All it's going to do is the stars are still going to play the same amount of minutes. You're just tightening the rotation. LeBron is going to play 38 minutes. That only leaves 6 minutes for somebody else. No impact.
11-minute quarters, does that help?
No. Better for TV.
John?
Michael has hit it on the head. It's better for television. You're still going to have 2.5-hour windows for broadcast. You're just going to have less basketball and more commercial.
Fewer timeouts. That's what I want.
The answer, of course, is shorter. Is a shorter schedule, but that is such a complicated issue. The players all want it, but they don't want to give back any money. Hence, it ain't going to happen. We got to get out of here. Music's playing. The weekend is at hand. Have a good one. We'll see you Monday. Good night from Toronto.